This is HPR episode 2781 entitled HPR Community News for March 2019 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 59 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in March 2019.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today this is Community News for March 2019 and joining me tonight is...
Hello, I'm Yannick, the French guy from Switzerland.
Yeah, and my name is Jerome Betten and I'm from the Netherlands. Hi.
Unfortunately, Dave won't be joining us tonight and actually he's decided to step away from the show for... we will continue on about that. There'll be more on the mailing list and I'll talk more about what's happened in any other business later on. So for those of you joining, HPR is a community podcast where we talk about where the shows are contributed by members of the community like ourselves, and the community news show, we go over the shows that were recorded in the last month. So, starting off, without further ado, I think Jeroen, you need to be other places later on today. So, the first show was What is VNF by JWP?
Yep. Very technical, a little bit over my head, it's interesting to learn new stuff, and that's the heart of HPR, I think.
Yeah, I think it does to networking what Docker containers does to the fundamental shift for networking, going away from physical switches to the network being something that you you can configure programmatically is basically what it was about. Expect to see a lot more of this in the future.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still clicking away. Yeah, it's software-defined networking, of course. Yeah, SDN. So VNF is probably something that I should think of in the neighborhood of SDN. Then probably I see it was a topic from the Open Networking Conference in Amsterdam. I didn't attend. I didn't even have time to listen to this podcast. The floor is yours.
Okay, it's a good one to catch up on, definitely. Virtual network functions are virtualized tasks formerly carried out by proprietary dedicated hardware. VNFs moves individual network functions out of dedicated hardware devices into software that runs on commodity hardware. There you go. So the following day, we had the community news, and there was one comment on that show.
Yes. Shall I read it?
Please, yeah.
So Mike Ray says, no. This is likely to be an accessibility nightmare and might well render it impossible for blind participants like me to read the notes at all. I think it's about embedding, media embedded show notes. I admit I rarely consult the notes, except for shows with a strong hacker twist, like the shows about XSD or Dev's Bash series of shows. Anything which is likely to have links, such as links to GitHub repositories or fragments of code, I might like to copy and paste and fill it about with. I can't imagine that other people who refer to show notes for clicking on links will be helped by embedding text into media files either. And while on the subject, I have not seen this yet on HPR, I think, but when anybody includes the output from command line interface stuff in show notes, posting screenshots of console or terminal output also makes it impossible for me to access the text. Keep the show notes as separate text, please, and don't don't embed them into media. If you do, maybe we can have them as both.
Yes, good idea. Actually, I should add that to the general information page about stuff to consider. Yeah, I'll do that. Normally, Dave would do this sort of thing. So, unfortunately, I'll need to do it myself from now on. One second. Okay, through the wonders of truncate silence, you won't be hearing that. And the following day, what you really are. Lost and Bronx looks back at his early days of gaming. And there was one comment to this. Turutoto says, oh, wow. This was way deeper episodes than I expected after listening for a couple of minutes. Really great, albeit sad at the same time, just like live show. Reminds me of a time when I started role-playing games and how I, as a dungeon master, couldn't bring myself to actually get players killed, but had to anyway always come up with some way to save them. Players had fun, but the challenge wasn't really there. So this... Did you hear this one, Jeroen? Or, This is typical of Lost and Bronx and why I always approach his stuff with care, because even his Star Drifter series, it can go from the comic right to the existential dread, and you never know which way he's going to go. I was walking from the bus in Schiphol Reich into work, and I was just stopped, and I was crying listening to the show. I was going, oh my God, thank you very much. But I think Turutoto nails it there in his comments.
Wait a minute. So you work in the Netherlands, right? At Schiphol Reich, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so and you're crying in the Netherlands as well, right?
Yes, it's a very Dutch thing to do. We're comfortable with our masculinity.
There's no denying that. Oh, we're a sad bunch, that's for sure.
I choose to be one of you. I chose to be one of you. Wilders was just born here.
Okay, so just continue, and I'll keep on laughing without my mic on.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that. Deepkeep explains SPF records, and this one threw me for a twist because the show was contributed by Plateau, but basically he just read out Deepkeep's gopher post on gopher of all things on how SPF records work.
Yeah.
And Beezy said, thanks for the help. I used this episode to help me understand why some of my mails was ending up in people's spam boxes. I added the SPF records and now all is well. Thanks.
And Paul B, was it Paul B or Paul EB? Oh, I don't know. Said, great explanation. It's been a while since I set up my email server with SPF, DKIM, and DMRC. And I'm pretty sure with lots of things with the letters in them. Since I'm about to migrate it to another server, this has been a valuable reminder of what SPF is about. I also think it is much clearer than every guide I read at the time I had to set it up. Well written by Deep Geek and well read and extended by Klaatu. Thank you too.
Oh, this is actually great stuff. I mean, I'm lagging behind in my podcast listening, but this is definitely something that I should listen to.
Yes.
Yeah, and I won't get old either.
No, and the SPF record is really simple. There's a lot of SPF record generator online, and that's absolutely something you need to have on your mail server. That if there's only one thing you need, that's the SPF record.
Exactly. I have my own web and mail server, and I know I should attend and do the chore of setting up SPF. I even don't know what it is yet, but clearly I'm going to do the podcast, listen to it, and then set it up in probably a few minutes or something.
Yep, cool. It is drastically, I know my mail provider uses it, and it's drastically reduced the amount of spam coming in.
Yeah. It allows your own mail to not end up in the spam box, and it allows the spammers to not use your server as a gateway.
Yeah, excellent. Ideal. Excellent.
And it basically uses, so the person receiving the mail checks the DNS record for this record, and then this DNS record will say who is and who isn't allowed to send you mail, basically. Very, very clever.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly that.
That's it in a nutshell. Yeah. Steve okay, says... Thanks. Oh, sorry.
No, I just said thanks, that's all.
No problem. Personal password algorithms by Kalatu from... this was... part of Deep Geek's Tattoos and Lost and Wrong series about basically coming up with a memorable password that you can use. Not 100% sure I agree with it, but it's an interesting topic of discussion.
Yeah, it's one way of generating passwords.
Steve says, LessPass. There is an open source project called LessPass that is trying to solve password management problem in much the same way as you are describing. Passwords are generated in a deterministic and algorithmic way using a master password, some known values related to the site, and some cryptography. There are two challenges that I see to this concept. The first one that you made reference to is how do you write an algorithm that will generate a password which is acceptable to the policies of any site? And the second is, how do you deal with sites that insist that you change passwords from time to time? In order to do that, you about have to change your algorithm, which means that all your other passwords will be broken. If these two problems can be solved, I'd be all for this type of password management.
Yeah, I haven't heard of LessPass, so I'm going to go and check that out.
Yeah, you for me also, yeah. But it's interesting. It's an interesting thought.
I'm thinking the value in this is security by obscurity, which is never a good thing. And the obscurity of Klaatu doing it, admittedly, he's done a podcast on it, but say he hadn't, then it would be difficult to see that there is an algorithm. However, if lots of people start using this LessPass concept, then you're looking for an algorithm, and then you're looking for a way to break that algorithm. So knowing this person is using LessPass, has been using my website, has generated this hash, therefore I have enough information to be able to crack the code. Like, think of Enigma, for example.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
But good to be thinking about it. Very good to be thinking about it. I like it. Following day, my YouTube subscriptions, number 3. And this was by Ahuka. Mm-hmm. One on there that I already had, Postmodern Jukebox, which I like. He had some RV shows as usual, and also had some nice science shows as well. So this is interesting. I passed on some of these to a colleague in work, so that's quite nice.
Yeah, I've checked out the science ones.
And I think there's also a Dutch orchestra in there, the one the fourth from above, the Metropole Orchestra.
Yeah.
So, another one for the Dutchies.
Represent. Oh, it's Dutch people. Hold on while I move my clogs around. He laughs, I've got, I'm hurrying here, and I've got, I'm drinking Belgian beer, but okay.
So. Yeah, but if you're a real, real Dutch guy, of course you drink Belgian beer, because let's face it, they make better beers.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. What can I say? The following day, disk enumeration on Linux, which thankfully I wasn't crying on the bus for this one. I was, in fact, rewinding and it's going, I knew about LS dev SD asterisk. Then fdisk list, then...
You're going to be very, very, very careful with fdisk, because you can actually destroy the system.
Yes, very, very, very. UDIS, though, had not come across. Very interesting. And also that you're able to mount as a regular user. Kind of cool. U-disks.
Okay, I didn't know.
Worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. Lots of comments on this episode.
So, yeah, do you want to read out some?
Yeah, okay. So Joel D commented on this episode. He said, the letters C and F. Klaatu mentioned he wasn't sure what the F in F-disk stood for. I had always been positive it stood for format because DOS had an F-disk command and that was pretty much its main use. However, I looked it up just now and turns out I was wrong. It stands for fixed, as in fixed disk setup program. He also seemed unsure of the reason why the main hard disk is usually C in Windows machines. PCs would originally boot off the floppy drive, which was always A, and for convenience, a second floppy drive was often added, and it was always B, so the hard drives started with C. I don't think there's any technical reason A and B haven't been reclaimed, but when I read A column or B column in a path, I still think floppy disk. At any rate, the whole scheme, is it scheme or shame? Scheme, let's go with scheme.
Yeah.
The whole scheme is sad and dumb.
Yeah, and to think that it's not DOS who came up with A, B, and C letters, but it's CPM who started that.
Yes, I was looking that up on computer file right now. I saw a video on that.
The good old times of CPM.
What can I say? I'm getting really old.
You're just more experienced. you can't reuse A and B because people use them. There are still people with floppy drives and using A and B. I guarantee you there are.
And I'm pretty sure 99% of the software on Windows would crash.
Yeah, there would be many reasons not to reassign them now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
although you can go into Windows now and reassign the drive letters.
Yeah, so you can.
You could reassign A and B if you wanted, but
you could do that for a long time now. But I'm pretty sure that C colon / is hard coded in many software.
Absolutely. Klaatu replies, "Thank you for the info, Joel. I guess I could have looked up F-disk. Thanks for overlooking my laziness. Very enlightening about the C drive. I can respect extreme backward compatibility, so I don't mind that they don't reclaim A or B. That said, the scheme is pretty stupid. I'm surprised it stuck around, but I guess once they'd made the decision, they just figured it was too late to change. It seemed the more I learned about historical Microsoft, the more I feel like it was started with no prior research. But then again, maybe I'm biased because we live in an open source world. After all, maybe back in the early 80s, you couldn't just call up Bell Labs and ask if the way you're programming disk detection made sense or not."
Well, that's one thing I would like to respond to, because they mentioned that the more they learn about the historical Microsoft, the more I feel like it was started with no prior research. And although, don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of that company, and they've done some not so nice things in the past regarding open source and standards, but in the early days, this Bill Gates guy that we all know and probably don't love, he was working at what was he working on? Let me think. I believe he was doing assembler on a mainframe to program his basic interpreter. So in a way he knew what he was doing.
And I think they see now that a lot of the code was taken from CPM. So if that's what CPM was doing with the drive letters, then it would be expected to be that. So you would.
Yeah, and there's this classical story why not every PC has been equipped with CPM ever since. And that's simply because at that time, the CPM was the one operating system to use for small computer systems. And IBM was going to visit him to discuss whether or not he would sell them a license to put it into their to be released PC, personal computer, the 5250, I believe, or the 5051 or anything, whatever, some number. And he decided that day that he wanted to go fishing. So he went out of his house and they came to a front door and there was nobody home and they really got pissed off. And they started looking around if there's anybody who had an operating system. And this Bill Gates guy, who didn't have an operating system, said, oh yeah, sure, I have one. I'll demo it in a few weeks. And then start scrambling for an operating system and found QDOS from some embedded software developer. And he licensed it. He bought it all stock and a lock and barrel. He bought it for, I believe, $50,000. And after that, made a bundle, selling it and licensing it to IBM. But if the guy from CPM hadn't gone fishing, there wouldn't have been an MS-DOS. Everybody would be using CPM.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a true story. Absolutely true. But anyway, like I said before, I have to leave. Next time, I'll try to definitely stay here for the whole duration.
No worries. And as you're leaving, it's a good time to introduce Joe. Joe has joined the call. Say hello, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Joe.
Not too bad. How are you? Where are you calling us today from?
Oh, well, I'm in Texas. I'm doing pretty good. It's a little chilly here.
What time of the day is it?
Hmm?
What time is it over there?
It's about 1:20.
Cool. Okay, I'll put you a link in the show notes to where we're at. And if you want, just jump on in.
Okay. Thank you.
There was a third comment on Katu's episode.
Go ahead, over.
By Hauka. Hauka's titled this comment, Old Drive Letters, and he said, Klaatu, remember that inertia is the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah, very much. Nothing as permanent as a temporary solution. And again, Deja Vu and other paperless document formats by Klaatu, who did a remarkable amount of shows this month.
Yeah, maybe we should rename the podcast Klaatu Public Radio.
Yeah, very close to it, yeah. which is good, but it also means it's bad, because it means that the build-up is down to one host, so other people should be submitting shows where possible. Although that said, I like his shows, so that's always a difficult balance. Never heard of Deja Vu, to be honest. And it's a more open format for distributing scanned documents, etc. And I'd never heard of it, but was interesting all the same to see how you would put stuff together. Any thoughts?
I had heard of it, but I have never used it. So maybe this will push me towards using it a little bit more. And no comments on this episode.
Nope. So the following day we had writing web game in Haskell, planetary statuses. Turo Toto describes the system for recording planet statuses in their game. And this is beginning to... As I'm listening to his episode, I also am reading along because I couldn't follow it otherwise. And I think Haskell seems to be a very visual language. At least it seems, with arrow signs and dollar signs and stuff. So it makes a lot more sense if you do follow along with the show notes.
Yeah. And two comments on this episode.
Klaatu says, agog and aghast. This was just so cool. The world-building part makes me want to write a script to generate random solar systems with unique planets and constellations. I love this project. Keep going. That's the sort of comment you want to get on the show. And from Klaatu, no less.
Yeah, and Tutoto replied, yes, this made my week. Thanks, Klaatu, this really made my week. I tried to work on the game at least a little bit every day, but sometimes progress feels super slow. I do like building mechanisms that mimic places and their inhabitants, and hopefully eventually allow emergent stories to pop up. Until that day, it's slow work of adding one more cog to the machinery.
It is giving me a massive insight into the thought process behind making one of these games that you just go... You know, you download and you go, yeah, couldn't be arsed, and then you delete it just straight away. It's just the amount of work going into it is amazing. Keep up the good work and continue to post shows about it, please. A quick review of somebody who's got a major addiction problem. This is NY Bill reviews yet another inexpensive multimeter. Yes,
Didn't he have a show last month on a multimeter?
That's what I'm saying. The man has a problem, and you know, I think we need to arrange an intervention over at his house.
Yeah, he said he's he has 10 of them or something like that.
Or more. He's done a good few shows already on multimeters here. But I do admit I like reviewing multimeters and I like his reviews of said multimeters.
I only have one multimeter and I barely know how to use it.
Well, I've
to be said for a good multimeter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have recommendations?
End up using one at least every weekend.
Do you have your own favorite?
No, I don't.
Okay.
The free one.
Yeah, good answer. So the following day we had Navigating the Maze of RPG Books by Tattoo, Tabletop Gaming, and basically how the terminology needed in order to get your first RPG book. And this, I felt, was useful insofar as you walk into a shop dedicated to gaming, it explains where you should go first to tell you exactly what to buy. Number one, get the rule book. So this was an episode that is obvious in hindsight, but yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, let's just talk about Advanced Dungeons. Oh, is it? It's called Dungeons and Dragons now, I think. They dropped the Advanced. But there's like 500,000 books about this game. And really, what Kletsu said is right. You only need one. You know, you only need the rule book. Everything else, if you're only a player, everything else is on the Dungeon Master. That's
right. And most rule books say, like in the beginning somewhere, this is just a guideline. Do what you want.
Yeah, yeah. That's the heart of role playing games. Do what you want, as long as everybody does the same thing, and the Dungeon Master is okay with that.
Am I the only one on this network who has never played a role playing game?
My guess would be yes.
Right, okay, there goes all my street cred. I too will be leaving HPR at the end of the month. Okay, the following day we have embedding...
Deja Vu all over again.
Yes, and Tattoo embedding hidden text in Deja Vu. I wonder, is he working secretly some sort of spy for a foreign government and is using HPR to smuggle his illicit messages out of wherever he happens to be?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, probably this month is not a good time to be mentioning that in relation to what happened in New Zealand. So our thoughts and indeed goes out to everybody over there. Anyway, yes, this is how to put in hidden text into Deja Vu files.
Yeah, useful techniques. As we said earlier, I have not used Deja Vu yet. But the more Klaatu talks about that, the more I think it's a nice container.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody will someday come up to me and ask me about it, and I will be able to point them, oh, yeah, you need to install this and do that, and then I will look cool. And people will think I have street cred when everybody knows I don't.
Point them to HPR and have them subscribe.
Exactly. This is Tony doing what Tony does best, going through the software on his Linux Mint machine. Cups, G-parted document viewer. I use Ock.
I'm actually expecting Tony to be on here in a little while.
Oh, cool. I use Ocular.
Yeah, he's with me on the Mintcast.
Very cool. Ah, yes, you're coming on here doing your advertising.
Well, that wasn't the point. You know, I just saw that you guys were on and figured I'd see what you were talking about.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name of your podcast.
Mintcast.
Mintcast.
Oh, okay.
Should I say it like 15 more times?
Yeah.
Well, I'm back there again.
The Mintcast.
Shall I put a link in the show notes?
The Mintcast. Okay, sorry.
Where they review various different types of mint foxes.
Yes, that is correct.
So there were no comments on that one, were there?
No, okay. I pretty much have all those software on my machine too.
Yeah, exactly. No harm to say it, though. This one was by... we never introduced the new host. That's what happens now.
Oh.
Let's introduce the new host.
See what happens when you're missing with someone? Which is where we're going to go now.
Okay. Welcome new host, Floyd C. Poynter, Alden P. and Minix. Sorry for butchering your names. This is absolutely terrible of me. I will need to get used to doing it myself again.
And welcome to the family.
Yes, indeed. I hope you stay around, because after that after that mess. Oh, God.
Well, didn't you tell them that once you're in the family, you can't leave?
Yes.
You can't leave.
This was about lead acid batteries, batteries in general, and modern uses of said. I would not have, not having a car anyway, as I keep saying. This was a good discussion on the use of car, of what you need to do to keep your batteries in good health.
Yeah, and we already said that in previous community shows, but it's a subject I don't have any interest in. Yet I was listening to the show very, very carefully, because it was very well recorded, very well said. So yeah, thank you very much for this podcast. I now have a little bit of knowledge about car batteries.
The thing is, I don't have a car, but I have reason to be wanting to store car batteries, lead acid batteries, around for long-term emergency storage, for example. So this is always good to know. It's even more appropriate, this, because I don't have the car. So my only option would be a smart charger.
12-volt batteries and inverters?
Yeah, that sort of thing. I don't know. I just have this, for some reason, living 9 meters below sea level. What could possibly go wrong?
Do you mean your battery charger would be smarter than you?
Yeah, I put it in a life jacket and my battery charger is waving down at me. Hey, I'm safe. Anyway, Toro Toto says, good to know. This was sure to come in handy. We're driving only short distances with a car, and while it hasn't yet damaged the battery, I suspect it will eventually do that. I will have a look at the type of battery and see if a smart charger would be a good idea. Thanks for the information. I wouldn't have learned this otherwise, I think. Nailed it. Absolutely perfect comments. Thank you very much.
And NY Bill posted also a comment. Good info. Nice job, man. I never knew about the different charging levels for different types of vehicle batteries. I always just bought one that fit and threw it in. I'll be more careful next time.
And this is NY Bill, who's got the electronics problems. So, yeah. The following day, we had also new host, Alden. How would you pronounce that, do you think?
Alden P.
Something like that.
Okay, let's do that.
Alden P.
A summary of things I like about CJDNS and Yggdrasil, and the places I think they could improve. Neither
I think it's
of
these.
Yggdrasil. You sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty
Say
sure.
Say that again.
Yggdrasil.
Do you know about these topics?
Absolutely not. But the name is something I remember from somewhere.
Okay, you can read the first comment then, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Okay. Fascinating by Tutorto. I hadn't even heard of CJDNS or Yggdrasil before, so I learned something today, and I'm not even done with morning coffee. I would love to hear more on what one could do with mesh networks. Broad topic, I know.
Yes, no reason not to do a series. Brian in Ohio says, more shows. Great show. I hope you do more podcasts on any topic you mention in the show. Don't hesitate to give detail. Absolutely agree. And we have the whole series concept available. Next one.
By Norist, entitled Gen 2. I have not used Gen 2 on well over 10 years. Could you do a show about why you are using Gen 2 and how it compares to Debian, Ubuntu, Fedora? You expressed some concern about your microphone, but there was no problem with your audio, loud and clear.
And Gavthra says, IPv6 end-to-end encryption. Interesting. I think that should be done in a commander data voice. Interesting. I'm right now learning how to use WireGuard for end-to-end encryption. I'm wondering how it works in IPv6. Different approach, but similar goal. So, very popular episode right there.
Yeah, and for your information, Yggdrasil is an immense mythical tree that plays a central role in Norse cosmology, where it is connected to nine worlds. There you go. Thank
Good
you, Wikipedia.
To know. That will no doubt come in useful.
And in this instance, it's an end-to-end encrypted IPv6 network.
Which is also good to know, and that should come in useful at the next pub cruise I'm at. Now, Ahuka wanting us to buy an RV and head across the States. I can see it now.
Yeah, I think he's secretly working for the RV consortium.
Yeah.
Or something
Big
like
RV,
that,
yeah. Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
Yeah.
He has one of my favorite channels on there, CGP Grey. Absolutely brilliant. The number of tickets and work that I have pasted his videos into is getting embarrassing at this point. So, yes, another good subscription if you're looking for some good videos, have a browse through them. I really like this format as well. I just click on all of them and then have a quick look at the video things and think, hey, well, do I want to subscribe or not?
The Doctor Who channel is, of course, one of those you cannot escape.
Hard for me to watch that channel because I traditionally watch or have watched as a child Doctor Who from behind the couch. So, yes.
You mean back when it was scary?
Well, back when my brothers were watching it and I was a kid. It's been scary. So the following day, subplots in storytelling, random elements of storytelling by Lost in Bronx.
Yeah.
And this was about subplots. And we've got a good comment by Operator who says, fun stuff. Long-time listener, almost first-time commenter. I want to say I always enjoyed your podcast. I don't read books or play Dungeons & Dragons, but I do watch a fair amount of TV and movies. You can hear the amount of passion and what you're explaining. I personally feel almost smarter when I can go back and understand why a story I remember was great or horrible. Now,
yeah, I agree 100% with that. I mean, absolutely. each time it's something when you listen to the show, you say, yeah, that's true, but until you realize you listen to the podcast, you don't realize it, but. Lost then again, as you said last time, each time I watch a movie now or I read a book, I say, uh-oh, I know what's going to happen now.
Yeah, you ruined it for me. Thank you very much. Well, I suppose we get over that. Lost in Bronx, the man who has mastered stating the obvious that nobody ever knew. So about this one, though, he did mention that I think he missed one reason why you would put a subplot into a story. And that's comic relief. He didn't mention that. Quite often, a story is so heavy that you just need to give the somebody something lighthearted to not have them, you know, just to break it up a little bit. But again, has me thinking as I was wiping the tears away from my face.
But again,
no, not this one. This one didn't let me cry. The next one did because on his quest for perfect laptop, Nightwise was looking for laptops to buy, and it was funny. He was talking about Brussels, Brussels North, which is a shitty train station. It has to be admitted. Dave and I stayed down there the first time to Fostem, and then we went never again. It's just like you design the place to be dingy. It's just feels dingy, but yes. And then he goes, I just couldn't understand the logic though that he was buying these expensive laptops and still was going there. So one of his so maybe he needs to do a show to explain that to us.
Yeah, so he owes us a show.
Beza, do you want to read Beza's comment or shall I? I'll read it.
Okay, go ahead.
Computer requirements specification. Hi Nightwise. Whenever we are in the market for a new computer, I think we inevitably want to get as close to the latest technology as our budget will afford. However, I think this can lead to subconscious over-specification of our requirements. as a way of justifying the purchase. A few years ago, I selected a very nice Sony laptop that I convinced myself was exactly what I needed to support my work. Unfortunately, an unforeseen breakdown of my car meant I had to spend roughly half my budget to get that fixed and back on the road. I still needed a new laptop, but the Sony was now out of the question. I revisited my requirements and realized that many of my must-haves were really like-to-haves. If it took a minute or two longer to rip a DVD, did it really matter? If it took a few extra seconds to open a very image-laden document, that was that really the end of the world? By adopting this approach, I found I was able to purchase a Dell rather than the Sony with what was left of my budget, and its relatively few shortcomings were almost immediately forgotten. That is a good comment. Although,
yeah,
it is bordering on a show in itself, so I will let it go this time. So, the following day, we had functor and adaptive in Haskell, and I thought I was hearing this wrong as he was reading the episode, but as he was telling us the episode, but that is the name of it. I mean, I may have mispronounced it, as I am wont to do.
Functor.
Yeah, functor.
Sounds it's a like function a, that returns a function.
Sounds like a German metal band.
Could be.
And the show notes definitely help here as well.
Oh yeah.
Kind of cool.
Comments by Biza. He said intuitiveness of Haskell. Is it Haskell or Haskell? There's a H.
Haskell.
Haskell. I've been writing software for over 30 years, but I find the syntax of Haskell anything but intuitive. In fact, less so than any other programming language I have looked at. Thanks to your excellent show notes, I can make sense of it, but I have to say I would not like to have to develop a project using this language. Obviously, I am missing the point, as nobody would design a language with the intention of its being difficult to use. Perhaps you could produce another episode addressing the question, why Haskell? An excellent episode for all that. Thanks.
And while I was watching the YouTube series, what do you call it, Computer File, they had Brian Kiernahan on, who was the developer of Unix, and he says that he tried Haskell but could never get his brain around it. So I feel like I'm in good company here. But anyway, Tura Toto replies, thanks and a great idea. Thank you for the comments. And episode idea. Haskell certainly is drastically different language compared to many others, and the learning curve can be steep. Sometimes I feel like I'm reading a math paper when I want to check for some feature or learn a new thing. I'll make a note and record an episode, why Haskell, at some point in the close future. There are quite many Haskell episodes in the queue, and I don't want Hacker Public Radio turning into Haskell Public Radio, so it might take a month or two. We have all over the summer. I was just saying that we have some quite a few shows in the queue at the minute, but traditionally over the summer, the feed just disappears, so feel free to completely take over the summer months.
Yeah, please do so. Anyway, I will try myself to produce episodes this summer.
Alden P was back with a HTTP, IPFS, and torrents. Some ramblings about how we might replace HTTP with some more robust decentralized protocols, interplanetary file system, and hypertext transfer protocol are linked in the show notes. No comments on that yet, because I think it's fairly recent.
Yeah.
I'll have to pick that one up.
Yeah, I like the interplanetary protocol thing, if for no other reason than it's got the word interplanetary in it. So, interplanetary file system.
Yeah, I think someday you will SSH to the moon, and then
yes,
up to Mars through VPN.
Then that's it. My bucket list is over. Been to the moon? No, I SSH to it. My SBC Nextcloud install part 1, the hardware. How I built a self-enclosed Nextcloud server using a single board computer and a RAID enclosure by Minix. This is a very nice episode. Some good links in the show to follow as well to see what he's done.
I will definitely have to grab this episode.
Not 100% sure how cheap it will be, but it's definitely yours.
I was playing on my Pi this morning and having some issues getting Alexa installed on it, but I guess I could switch over to this.
If you ever manage to install Alexa on your Pi, please send me the notes.
Yeah, technically it's installed, but it's not executing. Well, yeah. I was going to bring it to the Mintcast, and I was going to talk about to the guys on there about it. But I am trying to figure out what shows I want to put onto HBR, and I know you said you were short on shows for over the summer, so...
Yeah, no rush on that. HBR is for stuff that doesn't fit on your own podcast, yeah. We're all about sharing the love here. What was that show that you had again? Oh, yes, Mintcast.
Mintcast.
Is that .com or .org?
.org.
Super duper.
Matter of fact, Tony's in one of the other rooms on the server.
Is he stuck out there?
No, he's probably waiting for me to come over and discuss next weekend's show.
Cool. Well, that was the end of the shows, I think.
Yes.
So there were some other comments on shows previously. The last one on Tattoo's Ghost Script show from the 19th of December last.
Yes, and it was a comment by Klethu himself. He said, "We are stupid. Page 19 has three tables, 2-1 through 2-3, with a summary of bonus values for race, themes, and class. I think two lessons learned. 0, use the official character sheet when building a character for the first time. 1, actually read." So yeah, it was about thoughts about RPG character building, modern RPG playstyle compared to the old school, and more.
Yeah, that was on the Lost and Bronze Slatu commentary from episode 743. And the other one was in reply to Steve, who was talking about manipulating PDFs with GS and PDF stapler. And Steve had a comment about how he reduced the size of PDFs. And Tattoo said, glad this helps, Steve. You're not the only one this episode helped. I refer back to it at least fortnightly since posting." Yes, don't be afraid to use HBR as a way to remember stuff you've done. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, that's what I've done for my reviews and Git workflow. When people ask me, "Can you tell me about your Git workflow, or want to know about," I say, "Go to HPR, look for those episodes. You have everything there."
So, mailing list. Let's go to the mailing list.
Yep.
And there was a proposed change to the show upload form. Oh, yes, 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 yes. Hold on. This was at the beginning of the month, so I completely have forgotten about this.
Yeah.
So Dave was going there about tags for the shows, whether it should be mandatory or not, and because he needs to add them at the end. And we use these tags on the summary page, and we also want to make it, we're on the lookout for something HTML-wise that we can make the tags more intuitive. It's not really for the HPR website originally, but it is for search engines and whatever to be able to pick up what these tags were about. And maybe going forward, we will incorporate them more into the whole HPR thing. So there was quite an interesting discussion about that. Jill Verity, a well-known name in the Floss community, says that it shouldn't be that difficult to come up with some tags. And he also wanted the default option of clean and explicit to be set so that it forced the user to make a choice.
Yeah, I agree. I forgot to clean the flag on one of my episodes.
Okay, and then let's see. Proposed changes, I commented, as I do. as a HPR volunteer, I wanted to my concern as somebody who, you know, posts these things is, and I need to kind of represent in the community here, is that my risk of making more mandatory fields on the upload form is increasing the barrier. Now, that's probably
you know, it's probably not that much of a topic. So my comment on the tags is we have old, new and old hosts alike using the same string for the summary show as they have for the show notes field. So there is a risk that the tags will be superfluous. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and the whole thing about the explicit tag is if that is set incorrectly. We set it by default to explicit because if it's set to clean by accident and it slips out, then the side effect of that is that HPR as a whole gets delisted from iTunes or Apple or wherever else we put it. So we set it there explicitly. The logic behind setting it to explicit was to force people to think about it. And of all the tags that during the upload form, you can guarantee that the intro and outro might be set weird, or people have not put in show notes, but clean and clean is more or less always set. It's only been on some rare occasions that I've had to reset clean. And it's a bigger job to go from explicit to clean. In fact, no harm has been done, really. Somebody has, the only harm that has been done is that somebody who's only listening to the clean feed has missed your show. Whereas if it goes the other way around, then the risk to HPR's community is that it gets delisted. So,
yeah, makes sense.
But that said, what we could do is set it to a mandatory field. So default explicit and that it defaults to explicit by default. However, in your own personal profile, you can set it that when you're uploading shows, we will check your personal profile. And if you always send in clean shows and you select that on your personal profile, then we will set the default for you from then on to be clean. So we can do that. So that might be a solution for people. Let me see if there was any other comments on that topic. Some comments about fix me tags. Kevin O'Brien says, yeah, he thinks big deal, make it mandatory for a tag or two. Lawson Bronx wholeheartedly endorsed the idea of clean explicit flags and the tags. Michael Spannerbauer, external tags rather than something we maintain ourselves. That has me thinking. He wants to be able to pick existing ones, and Dave has given him a link to existing ones, but as I explained, we don't use JavaScript, so it's difficult to pre-populate existing ones for people.
And the problem with existing ones is that either you find something that's not really what you want, but because you're lazy, you're going to pick that anyway, or you just, you know, pick at random and hope for the best. So I think it's better if we have to actually think about what we're going to put in the tags. Even though, yes, it's true, sometimes it can end up being the only show with that tag, but...
Yeah, that's not a problem. That's okay. If that links to, say, you're doing something about Software Freedom Conservatory or, you know, some hashtag that happens to be trending at that moment, then it's trending on our site with this hashtag, so our site turns up as a result of having that hashtag. So that is the point of it.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely fine. Okay, nobody, I waited until this show so that people would hear this discussion. So if you have opinions on this, join the mailing list and respond to the thread, or just generally join the discussion and we'll see. I have no particular objection to it. I think the universal consensus is that we make tags a mandatory field and we will make the clean and explicit also a mandatory field, but allowing you to default to your own personal preference.
Yeah, I think that's the a very good idea. So everybody can have what they prefer.
Okay. Then I have a request for shows. There was a thing from Dave about the community news, request for shows.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like, if you are listening to HPR and would like, you're just stuck with a topic and you would like somebody to record a show about it, then please contact the mailing list about it, or send a message to the HPR Twitter feed, and we'll hear about that as well. So, backup of Android settings. This is a show I'd like to hear about. During the first time install of an Android phone, it's possible to restore data from a backup from an Android phone, a backup from the cloud, which they mean Google's cloud, or an iPhone device. Is there a way to backup and restore from a personally managed system, so something like OwnCloud or whatever, that you could backup your Android phone to OwnCloud, and then when you get a new phone or you have to factory reset your phone, you could download your settings? Anyone know about that? If you do, or this spurs you to think about stuff, or that you think, I've already looked into this and there's no way to do it, then that's something you can talk to us about. And I would like, next topic, copy and paste under X Windows using and its desktops. How copy and paste is managed on popular desktop systems like GNOME, KDE, LXQT, etc. Or even how, I don't know, random distributions like, pick one, a random Linux Mint, for instance, might go about doing that.
Oh, if only there was a podcast about Linux Mint.
Yes. Only. So, any other business? Yes. Sorry to Yannick. There was a misunderstanding about Yannick's show 2740. When it was discussed in the February Community News shows, the show about Pop OS, the subject Yannick had spoken about previous edition of the podcast, it was a misunderstanding on our part that we thought he had gone against our syndication guidelines, but in fact he had not. It was merely the same subject being spoken about the same person on two different podcasts. So our apologies to you, Yannick, for that.
Apologies accepted.
Thank you very much.
No harm's done.
Changes to the host page. The page for each host, which is host ID, and in my case 30, which contains a list of all shows contributed by that host with the show notes, has been made more compact. You now only see the show titles, release date, duration, series, if applicable, tags, and show summaries. Clicking on the title itself will get you to the show itself. A list of all hosts in alphabetical order can be found at correspondence, or you can go to top home about hosts, and from there clicking on the show number takes you to the page about that host. It will also link you to host pages from other pages from each show. So the host page is linked on each show.
I think the host page is better like that. Because I was looking for my for my shows, and the Raspberry Pi one took hold the space with all the photos and
yeah, no,
it's a lot better like that.
Yeah, and it also means if random people are linking the link directly to the show and not to a summary page or something else, so it's your show is more concise and contained in a particular spot.
Yep.
Dave, thanks people for doing summaries and tags. Myself and my Bill and Windigo sent in some tags, so there've been 32 shows. About that, and you can go to report missing tags. And then that brings me to the last comment, which is I would like to thank Dave for his work here in HPR. What's actually happened is we were contacted by that we've had to move to because of our bandwidth to archive.org, and we were contacted by Audible with a pretty good sponsorship deal, actually, and it means that we'll be able to pay the hosting there and other expenses and stuff that have been coming up from time to time. And in discussing that, they will be requiring that we change the licenses of our shows from Creative Commons going forward to, you can all still, don't panic, you can still license your show Creative Commons, but they will be you need to read the terms and terms of the Ansible or the Audible show upload thing. More information about this will be sent out in the mailing lists as well. And I know that some people will be a bit annoyed about this, but at the end of the day, there's like bills to be paid and stuff, so it's not like we're going to be getting all the money associated with this. Obviously, if your show if you decide to release your show on Audible, then then, you know, there'll be information about how the profit sharing will be done, if there's any profits after the expenses. Because we're entering into that deal, you will need to contact me to get a non-disclosure agreement signed. But it's not that complicated, so I'll just need your stuff like your driver's license and or passport or something like that, and then your bank account details. So going forward, we'll be doing that. You can obviously opt out of that yourself. There'll be more information in the show notes about it. But basically, Dave was not... we didn't see eye to eye on how that should be done, and he's decided to step down. And I'd really like to take the time to thank him for all the work that he has done here on the network. And hopefully, Yannick, I'll be passing all his stuff over to you so that you can take over.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker
Public
Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.